In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Did Standing Gas for Springsteen, Anthony?
Nah, I just decided to give him some.
He's just a sports writer, so every sports writer gets Springsteen. That's how it goes.
Hey, look, maybe.
You know what he needs first, though? It's the introduction to Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Ben Standig, Commanders beat reporter for The Athletic, is with us, author of The Athletic's annual NFL agent survey and certified bona fide sports writer. Standig, do you fit the classic archetype stereotype of a giant Bruce Springsteen fan?
No, I like Springsteen, but have never actually seen him in concert, and I don't like worship at the altar of Bruce, even though the boss is the boss and would love to see him. But no, I'm not one of those kind of sports writers.
Yeah, no, I kind of sounds like we're on the same boat. Like, I like him. My dad is a huge, like, super fan, so I definitely grew up with a lot of Springsteen in the house. But I'm not like a lot of sports writers. Did you see the photo of like the ESPN Insider Avengers assembling at the Springsteen show in New York? That was literally like Jeff Passan, Woj, Schefter, like anybody who was like the top insider at ESPN was all at the same Springsteen show. And I was like, this is a little on the nose, guys.
Yeah, every time I hear some sports writer say that that's their go-to, it is like, okay, I guess you just read that in the playbook to some degree that this is part of the deal, but sure. Enjoy yourself. I like the boss, but...
Yeah, maybe we're doing it wrong, Standing. Maybe we'd have higher profile gigs if we just were bigger Springsteen fans. Anyway, I think you're doing the Lord's work with this agent survey. I think it's really cool. It's something I look forward to every single year. Can you take us kind of a little bit inside the process and how it's evolved over the years? Like, when you did the first annual one, how many agents were you talking to? What was the feedback like? Like, how cooperative were they versus this year? Now 6 years in, you got 31 agents. And for, I believe, every single poll question that you asked, you got a full 31 responses. So what has it been like to do this year over year? And what was it like putting together this year's version?
Yeah. It was, when I got to The Athletic back in 2019, it was a little more of the wild, wild west back then. Like, you could kind of, you know, if you had an idea, you could probably execute it. And I was, you know, trying to come in there and, you know, make a name for myself. And, agents have an interesting reputation, as we all know, a little used car salesman, a little Bob Sugar in the Jerry Maguire movie. But, you know, they represent these players. They also are therefore the ones that talk to the teams. They talk to not just one or two teams, they talk to all the teams, so they have good comparison points. And, you know, at first it was sort of a little bit of like, hey, tell me about, like, what are the key things about your job that we don't know about, and then some league stuff. And it's probably morphed more into questions about the league. There's a lot of questions this year, or every year, about general managers, who's good at their job, who do they trust, things like that, and then a lot of other specific topics. But, I try to change up the roster of people responding, but it's not completely that way. There's some people who've been in it several years, and from that, you know, you gain trust that, you know, they're not going to expose them or burn them or whatever. And so that's led to, I think, in a more, like you said, more full responders, as well as, like, you know, a little more honest views in some cases. And I had a lot of questions I had to leave on the cutting room floor just because of space or what have you. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And I'd imagine, as someone who talks to a lot of folks around the league and especially a lot of agents, your conversations in the last 18 months have been very different than they were the first 4.5 years that you were doing this. And obviously you've been covering the team for longer than that. Is this the first time that you feel like, you know, not because last year was still a transition time, this year doing this, that like when you get to the Commanders and you ask any questions you might about them, and or you're asking Lee questions and all of a sudden people have positive things to say about Washington. Was that a first, and what were those conversations like? Because I presume most of these agents know that that is your day job, is covering the Commanders.
Yeah. There's a question that is one question is like, what's the best run organization, like a top to bottom, not just the front office, but the whole thing. And then which is the most unstable? And the top answer for unstable this year was the Panthers, with 9 votes out of 31. But honestly, the answer I got the most was, boy, this was a lot easier when I could just pick Washington. They actually had to think about it. And for years, that was a constant. And, you know, Bruce Allen was not somebody that was on everybody's Christmas list. Obviously, Dan Snyder goes without saying. And then, you know, whether it was Jay Gruden or Ron Rivera, since I've been doing it, you know, that factored in as well. But, yeah, there was a lot of positives about the Commanders in this one, from Adam Peters and just kind of everything that they did this offseason. That and just to be clear, this isn't winning off the field. This isn't winning the offseason when it meant signing Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders. This is putting infrastructure in place, getting rid of a poor setup to have a much better one, and people are bullish on that. So yes, a very, very, very different vibe this year, talking to people about the Commanders than the previous years.
One of the quotes that really caught my eye is Ben Standing's with us here on the Hoffman Show. Of course, you know Ben from his day job covering the Commanders on the beat for The Athletic, but also the author of their annual agent survey, which just came out this week. You can read it in The Athletic. One of the things that caught my eye, one of the quotes, Commanders adjacent, was they have a scouting structure now, something that they haven't had for 20 years, paraphrase from the agent who told you that. Can you, like, did you follow up on that, or just generally, can you expand on that based off of your knowledge of covering the team day to day? Like, what do you think that agent meant, slash what does it mean to have a scouting structure, and how has it mattered for them this offseason?
Yeah, I think part of it is, like, you know, like we've all heard the stories, right? Dan Snyder comes in from off the yacht to make the pick, or, you know, Bruce Allen in the middle of the night makes a trade for Alex Smith, it doesn't even consult his head coach. Like the fact that these things were occurring, it's not like they didn't have scouts on the road, but I think they do have a deeper group of people now on the scouting side in general. But now there's more checks and balances. There's more of a collaboration. There's now more of a logical, here's a scout, sends up the report, it goes up the food chain, eventually gets to Peters, and then, you know, at some point they have a conversation about this player, whether, you know, individually or in the context of the draft and so on. And before, like, even if you did some of those things, it just, you know, chaos would eventually ensue. And so I think it's a lot of that. Now, you know, even the last few years, I mean, you know, we obviously have all discussed the last week or so about how the draft classes have been pretty poor, you know, for this group. But even then, at least it was sort of like, all right, there's at least some sort of a structure. It just wasn't, maybe you didn't have the right people at the end of the line, taking all the data and using that to find players. Like, you know, ironically, a lot of the scouts who were there then are still here now. They didn't fire a ton of scouts or anything. It's just there is more of a plan, of a process, of a structure to what is happening to get hopefully the best results.
Ben Standing with us here on the Hoffman Show. Adam Peters receives a couple of votes, one of the higher vote totals in terms of most trusted general managers. I'm guessing in years past when you've done this and asked the, hey, who's the future GM question, his name has come up. How do you think the respect and relationships that he's had have helped Washington hit the ground running in a way that maybe even they didn't anticipate. And sorry for the long-winded question here, Ben, but one of the things that caught my ear over the last couple of days when Peters spoke earlier in the week and when Newmark did yesterday was they both said they got more done this offseason than they anticipated, which I thought was an interesting thing to kind of let out of the bag. And I'm curious how you think that their ability to hit the ground running goes back to maybe some work that they had done to build some of their relationships and things like that, earn the trust of agents over the past couple of years that they were in different positions.
Yeah, no, I mean, so, yeah, like you said, one of the questions is who's the future GM to watch? It's a question I've been asking for 5 of the 6 years. And in the previous 4, Adam Peters received at least 1 vote every year. And the last 3 years, he either was the outright winner or tied for first. So his reputation has been pretty stacked for a while. He was just obviously waiting to find a good opportunity. Look, I think that he's obviously well-respected. He was on a team with San Francisco that has, you know, a ton of success during that time that he was there. And, it says a lot about, you know, even just beyond this survey, just since, you know, Peters was on the radar to get the job. Then once he did, I just, you know, over and over again, people are pretty effusive in their praise of him, both as an executive, as a talent evaluator, and just as like a person to deal with. So obviously, I think that has a lot to do with his ability to get this thing going, because he clearly is coming from a good place of understanding what it takes to get this thing done. And Newmark, you know, he's been in the game for a long time. He's with the Lions this entire time, which obviously for most of that tenure was not really a good thing in terms of the success they were having. But the last few years, certainly they've turned things around, and he was there for that as well. And he and Peters, you know, became tight over the years of being on the road and so on. So, yeah, I mean, Peters clearly knows what to do, how it all works out. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But he clearly has a great reputation, and there was another question about who is the best GM. Well, since he hasn't actually had the job, you know, really, he wasn't involved there. But, you know, it's not going to surprise me at all if he's, you know, top 5 on that list by next year, assuming that Washington at least has a competitive year, even if that doesn't mean, you know, a ton of losses or a ton of wins.
Right. No, totally, totally with you on that. I'm also curious, Ben, because Brandon Sosna then is 2nd, receiving 3 of the votes for who is a future GM on this year's version. When was the last time Washington had someone that was a viable answer? Because I just feel like there's been such a dearth of talent in the building for such a long time. Has, in the history of you doing this, has there ever been a Washington person on the future GM the list, like Brandon Sosna, already is in year 1 under Adam Peters here in D.C.?
Yeah, Lance Newmark also got 1 vote in that category. No, I think the answer is no. I'm not sure that Kyle Smith ever did get 1. Like, when I would talk to people about Kyle, like, you know, he was not, you know, there were people that liked him, but I think just like with so many other aspects, everybody was, you know, brought down by the dark clouds hovering over this place, and nobody could get complete feel goods from others around the league, because it's always, you know, questions about what's going on here. So, no, I mean, that's the thing, to have, again, just to use this small sample size, you know, to have Peters, a consistent winner, if not at least guy that's getting mentioned, and then to have Sosna, like, I knew he had a positive vibes. You know, he was at USC as like a 28, 29-year-old, then he goes to Detroit. He's only 31 now, and to hear some of these agents really praise him, you know, he was like the Lions' contract guy last year. He's in charge of the Commanders' football ops, and he's overseeing other things like at the analytics. There's a lot that goes into that as a thinker, as a person, as a communicator. And based on what you've heard from these agents, I don't imagine it'll be too long before Sosna gets an opportunity to get his own shop to run.
Ben Standing with us here on the Hoffman Show, Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Non-commander stuff in this survey, Ben. One of the most interesting sets of answers that I found was the hard knocks section on the Giants. Most of the agents said this was terrible for the Giants. I thought it was really interesting because in talking to some people like who cover the team, like our guy Sean Mraz up in New York for WFAN, he's like, people are kind of hating on Joe Shane, but like Joe Shane is actually doing the correct stuff here. It's everyone else in the room who needs an adjustment. And so to hear all these agents be like, man, that's not a great look for Shane. Even some of them saying like, I didn't think it was a good look for the Giants, but I actually like Shane as a GM. Do you think that they're right, that this will actually affect how teams handle Hard Knocks, especially the offseason version in the future? Or is this a bunch of agents, you know, just spouting off hot takes, pretending that, I don't know, they have my job?
Yeah, well, you know, look, when we watch the regular Hard Knocks, which to me I've kind of bailed on a few years ago, you know, it was a really interesting concept, and, you know, now it's watered down. Everybody, every team kind of has some version. But generally speaking, the interesting thing there was, like, the, you know, we weren't really seeing the game plan, right? We weren't seeing how the coaches were kind of really choosing how they were going to run the team. There was a lot of personal profiles and, you know, some interesting conversations along the way. This was much more in the weeds in terms of the actual art of free agency and the draft and putting a team together and negotiating. I mean, that Joe Shane, Saquon Barkley conversation before Barkley decides to go to Philly, I mean, it was pretty fascinating to see a GM and a player, you know, have the conversation we've all always wondered about. You know, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to let us know, what have you. And then not to mention, you know, what the, you know, they're talking to quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels included, before they're deciding what to do. They're debating, to, you know, trade up or we stay here, et cetera. So I think that was all really interesting. I liked it. But at the same time, it's much more, it's showing really kind of how the sausage is made where the regular Hard Knocks doesn't. And I can imagine a lot of teams are kind of like, I don't know. Do we really want to show what we're doing here? Now, obviously it's happening way after the fact, so it's not like it cost them in terms of the draft or free agency. But I definitely do wonder if teams are going to, you know, won't be willing to do that going forward, even though, like I said, I found it fascinating. I think the other thing I do wonder is, you know, the genius term gets thrown around a ton, you know, when it comes to this league, whether it's play callers or sometimes talent evaluators. And the one thing that struck me watching that, I'm not saying the conversations and debates weren't interesting, but in a lot of cases, they weren't very dissimilar to the ones that we all kind of have.
Right.
And I know we only saw a snippet of it. There are obviously a lot more hours in the day we don't see. But, and that's the thing, like, there's only, you know, they're not splitting the atom. This isn't like watching Oppenheimer trying to figure out, you know, how do you make an atomic bomb work and what do you do? This is like, well, do we spend this much on a running back? Do we trade up? Do we like this guy? You know, do we like this kid's answers? You know, it's the same thing we always kind of do. So I think that it pulled back the curtain in a fun way, I think, for us, but it also, I think, made the whole process seem a little more generic than for some people would think. And that's perhaps why it's also not ideal, because it doesn't make everybody look as brainiac, perhaps, the perception is.
Right. Now, I think that's a great point, because I think to your point and the how much gets cut, like, I think probably some fans walk away thinking that's the entire process, and it's not. Like, they lay out on a very, like, they laid out a bunch of headlines, and then off camera, they're writing the story. And I think that part is really important to point out. And if there was a way to provide just an ounce of that kind of insight, and I feel like they did it sometimes. I mean, the Giants, you know, the Bears are getting criticized right now for exercising a lot of editorial control over Hard Knocks. And they're, you know, it just kind of became this almost like propaganda-y type of thing for the Bears. And they seem to not let any real drama out. They didn't do a lot of stuff beyond Caleb in terms of personal interest stories, even to the extent that they've done in other Hard Knock seasons. And for the Giants, like, it felt like they went about as far as they could in letting the cameras in and letting stuff stay in the show. And I do wonder if other league executives are like, I don't want people to think that that's what we do, because what we do is so much deeper than this surface level stuff, and we can't give away the secrets. And then, you know, we already deal with every fan in America thinking that they could do our job anyway. And all this does is cement that, because they forget all the stuff that winds up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, it's basically like every person in those rooms already, you know, read the information, watched the film, assessed what they did, and then they come into the conversation with everybody having a baseline that's higher than what we all can see, and then have the basic chat of what do they think. It's not the deeper details of, you know, intricacies of what the wide receiver on tape is doing or how the cornerback reacts to this or that, whatever it might be. And then, you know, even things like the salary cap, it's not just, boy, it'll cost a lot of money. Well, it's really digging into how things could potentially work and so on. So, yes, it's a simplistic look at the situation, but like you said, they pushed it seemingly about as far as they could, and that was just that's enough to be intriguing and to maybe, you know, like you said, to have people think they know more than what's really being shown.
Last thing for Ben Standick here on the Hoffman Show. You closed out with kind of an open-ended, like, wish list question. If given the power, what's the one change in the NFL universe you would make? You took guaranteed salaries and eliminating the franchise tag off the table because that would be most agents' number one request. Was there any of these proposals that you really liked and or you think actually has a chance of becoming reality, let's say, in the next 5 years?
Well, you know, they talked, a lot of them just said, hey, you know, you got to get rid of the artificial, you know, anything that's like not pure grass fields, you know, you got to get rid of that for player safety. The one that always tried to drive me crazy is it's one thing to have the extra games now, 17, it'll likely be 18, but when they make teams play like on a Sunday night and then on a Thursday, that type of stuff just is crazy. And if you're going to go to 18 games, you know, are they going to put in a second bye? If you don't, then I think it's, you know, gets pretty outlandish in terms of claiming you're worrying about player safety. And that's something that a lot of these agents, you know, talk about. Like there was a different question about, are you cool if the league goes to 18 games? And a lot of them were like, yeah, but in part because it means more money for everybody involved. But it's like, yes, but only if there is that second bye. Or like someone suggested, no buys until week 7. That way the teams get, you know, you don't need really a bye after week 4, right? In theory. So, you know, if they do the right things around the notion of player safety, then I think a lot of this could work and make sense. But that's, I think, been the rub for a lot of agents and the players, is that you can't just keep adding these games and then have teams playing on a Sunday night and then Thursday. Like that, it's just bad for the product, for not even just the health of the players. It just makes for a lesser product. So I think that was something, those are the type of things that stood out. And, you know, there's some other interesting ones, like every guaranteed contract under 3 years. Sorry, every contract with 3 years or less should be guaranteed. You know, okay, I think that's an interesting notion, right? I mean, the Commanders just signed, you know, an army of players on one-year deals. Should those be guaranteed as opposed to a four-year deal that's only somewhat? I don't know. That's interesting. You know, anything to help sort of the players who have this very short window to play and make money, I think can make a lot of sense. But, I think those are and of course, the agents are going to be on the player side. Let's just be clear about that. I think some of those were the ones that were interesting, but there was a bunch of other ones for sure.
For sure. We could do probably a couple of shows just on the entirety of topics in this. There's so much good stuff in here. And if we had you in for it, we could probably make a whole week out of shows because I'm sure that there's stuff that got left on the cutting room floor. You can read Ben Standig's 6th annual NFL agent survey in The Athletic. And of course, we'll be talking to Ben as Kevin Sheehan does, as Russell does, all season long. You'll be hearing him here on the Team 980 as the Commanders get going a week from Sunday in Tampa. Ben, enjoy your final non-NFL football weekend, my friend.
Oh, boy.
That's here.
Like that, I got a lot of resting to do here, but unfortunately I got a lot of work to do, so we'll see. But I appreciate it, and yeah, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. That's Ben Standig, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Of course, Commanders beat reporter for The Athletic. When we get back, Logan got going on one on Take Command about the Commanders offensive line situation. You got to hear this discussion, and we'll talk about it next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And our football coverage is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Sometimes when we're recording Take Command, I surprise Logan with something or Logan surprises me with something and we get going on some kind of tangent, and that's what happened. We started talking about the offensive line this week. We were doing our 53-player roster breakdown, and we're going position group by position group. And as we started to talk about the offensive line, I brought up, as you'll hear, a couple of points that I heard made by Derek Klassenberg and Robert Mays on the Athletic Football Show. And these are ones that have been made by plenty of other podcast hosts. I just happen to be listening to Derek and Robert's NFC East previews. And they do a really great job. They're two really smart guys. Robert's a friend. Like, I'm not here to bash those guys. But I do think that they were off on something in regards to the Commanders' O-line. And let's just say Logan agreed. You got to hear this. And then we'll talk about it on the back end. This is from the Take Command podcast with me and Paulson. Along the offensive line, Logan, no major surprises here. Brandon Coleman, Nick Allegretti, Tyler Biadasz, Sam Cosmi, Andrew Wiley, Cornelius Lucas, Trent Scott. I think it was almost, we just didn't know what the injury status was there. So as we made some predictions, you know, or said like, oh, did he make it? But turns out Scott's still there as the fourth tackle. Michael Dieter, and then Chris Paul. And I think Chris Paul is also the kind of interesting one when you talk about Scott, because we thought maybe he had surpassed him on the tackle depth chart and that made Trent Scott expendable. Julian Good-Jones, the only offensive lineman they wind up keeping on the practice squad. So I think that's interesting as well. They could obviously add and swap some guys out.
They're not signed Ricky Stromberg. I thought he was on there too. It might have changed.
I do not see Stromberg on the initial release. I can look that up real quick. Okay. But yeah, so what do we make of this offensive line group, where we're worried and where we feel pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the group we kind of thought it was going to be, you know what I mean? Like, approximately this. I think the Trent Scott thing makes sense because they don't know where Coleman's at. And if you're not sure where Coleman's at, you still need to make sure you've got a swing guy that can do both. And Scott has shown that he can do that. He showed that last year. So I think the main thing is, like, where's Coleman at in his development? Will he play week one? I don't know. I don't know if I'd feel super comfortable throwing a rookie in versus that Todd Bowles defense and how much they pressure, but if you feel like he's ready to go, maybe you're rotating series or doing something like that, or maybe you pick a softer landing spot in terms of getting him in there. But I think those tackles, they make a lot of sense. I mean, that's kind of what we thought it was going to be from very early in the offseason. The interior honestly feels kind of the same way, you know, like there, I don't think there's really any surprises there. They go Dieter, even though he didn't like blow the doors off preseason. But again, like none of those other guys, Ricky Stromberg, Julian Good-Jones, like, made a push to say that they need to be on the team over him. And I think Chris Paul, I'm happy to see that, because I think early on it looked like he was going to have a difficult time making the roster, but he just kept plugging away. And I think that's a very deserved spot for him. So very happy for him that he's in there.
Yeah, for sure. And Stromberg, not on the practice squad. In fact, he's not currently on anyone's practice squad. A lot of Bears fans are clamoring, saying, gotta go get him. Like, yeah. Okay. You have fun with that, Chicago. Bush Ricky the best. Yeah, but yeah, totally. So I agree. I think this is a group that potentially could evolve throughout the year. It's one that I expect them to put a lot more resources in next year. And they are just going to have to be cognizant of what they are right now, which is better than I think some people think. Like, I was listening to the NFC East preview on the Athletic Football Show yesterday, and Derek Klassenberg, who I like a lot, just crushed them. They're like, oh my God, he's like, are they going to be 2023 Giants bad? And I was like, there's just no way that that is the case.
I will say they're not very deep. The depth is a little bit of a concern. So if there's an injury, maybe they kind of drift into that territory. But I think when you look at, and this is like really nerdy stuff, you know, like there's the analytics of offensive line play. And last year, obviously, they weren't good. But when you watch down to down, like turn on the film, watch it.
Yes.
And you're watching five-step drops down in and down out. Like, so I think I've said this before on the podcast. I remember being in meetings with Kyle, and he's like, I don't want a five-step drop more than five times in a game. And we were doing it upwards of 35 times last year. You are exposing that group to so much difficulty and challenge. And when I watched them, I was like, they're actually in these reps when the defense knows. That's the other thing. When the defense knows it's a passing down, you're basically giving them all the advantage. And we were doing that every single play. And for them to be as consistent as they were, I was like, oh my gosh, like this group is, I know they're much maligned statistically, but they're playing better than the numbers would indicate. And it's kind of like interesting because you go back 2 years, 3 years, and they were like the darling statistically. It was like, this is one of the best offensive lines in the country, blah, 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 blah. But when you watch it down to down, they weren't as good as they appeared. So when you watch the film, I think, you know, everyone gets on Wiley as being this, like he was fine last year. And I think if you are able to deleverage them and go from 35 times to 15 times, which is a much more reasonable number in terms of five-step drop pass protection, because you're going to have quick game, you're going to have screens. I'm not saying throw the ball 15 times. This group will play better. Statistically, they'll play better. So again, that's where it comes down to with them specifically, Cliff, and this offensive staff, and saying like, and I think in the preseason you've seen they've done a really good job. Like, have we even talked that Chris Paul started a game at right tackle after playing guard for the entire preseason?
Right, protecting Jaden Daniels, by the way, not just Jeff Driskel.
And we didn't even talk about him. There was no pressure because we understood the ball needed to get out. We ran the football effectively. That it's ridiculous, but you can insulate the offensive line, and you have to. And so I think when you look at the best offenses in the league right now, they have good offensive lines like Detroit, San Francisco, Kansas City, but they insulate that group a ton. They like the play callers there are excellent. So I think
so does the quarterback, and that's the other part of it that we've talked about in the past. That like sacks are a quarterback stat. Like if it's one thing to five step drop and stand there and pat the football, it's another thing to hit your fifth step and launch one down the field to Terry McLaurin. And Jaden Daniels is going to do that. And that is one of the, I'm not going to call it a concern, but the questions that I have is like, do they insulate Jaden so much that they don't let him use what is his number one superpower, throwing the deep ball? But I think Cliff is going to balance that. And I think that they'll set up stuff where like we have, or they have these slot fades that he can throw, and he throws as well as anybody from day one, but they're easy reads. And if it's shut down, then he knows where to go. And so there's a lot of questions for sure about this offensive line. And the fact that we still don't know who's going to start at left tackle should be said out loud to acknowledge the fact that, there is not like some stacked group. But I do think that if you're just looking at data based off last year, that data needs a ton of context. And I think you just did a really good job of providing said context.
Yeah, and I think the other thing this is a great point, and you brought this up, is the one thing Jaden Daniels, I think I slept on in the draft evaluation, but I was doing a film breakdown with Coach yesterday, and we were watching a couple plays that I picked, and he goes, the thing I love about him is he can accelerate his process immediately. So there's that play against Miami where it looks like man coverage, and they rotate to cover two, and they're bringing in this fire zone, and he's supposed to work to the right, but he's working to the left, and he can tell right away that he screwed it up. And you're like, that would have been a sack fumble last year because he's got two free runners off the right side. He's looking to the left. He can't even see them. But his footwork was so good. Bop, 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 ball out. And it was like,
yeah, the one that he threw out of bounds over Terry's head.
Yes. Like, I know you screw. I know he made a mistake. But the physical ability to say, oh, I did screw it up, and get my feet where I got to get them to get this ball out before the rush is even past the line of scrimmage, I thought, man, like, that's going to save you 10 sacks this year, 15 sacks, like just from that physical ability of the quarterback.
So That's from Take Command. If you want more of our breakdown of the roster and more from Logan, obviously check out the Take Command podcast wherever you get yours. But, and I thought that was really interesting, and I'm glad Logan did that, because I think really quickly we're going to know whether Logan's theory of the case is right, which I think it is, or whether maybe this offensive line is actually way worse. And one thing that I thought, you know, we did never read the comments yesterday, and there was someone who was like, ah, the Commanders roster is even worse than it was last year on the O-line. And I was like, you think Tyler Biadasz is worse than Nick Gates? Like, what did you watch? Tyler Biadasz was a starter for the Cowboys last year on a great O-line, and Nick Gates was here. That seems to matter. You know, left guard last year. Okay, if you want to say Allegretti's not that much different than Chris Paul and Sadiq Charles and whoever else rotated in there last year, fine. Cosme should be better this year than last year because he's another year better. Wiley is Wiley. And then, okay, Charles Leno at left tackle versus Brandon Coleman. Like, I know Leno wasn't anyone's favorite, but he was solid. And there were some numbers that suggested in some aspects he was actually really good. But I think that the last part is the most important. Like, offensive line play is quarterback and scheme dependent more than it is the actual players themselves, unless they are so heinously bad or so absurdly good that they can overcome the quarterback and the scheme. In other words, if you put me at left tackle, it doesn't matter what scheme or what quarterback, he gonna die, and that scheme ain't gonna work because I cannot play NFL left tackle. If you put Trent Williams in a bad scheme with a quarterback who pats the football, well, you're still probably gonna get some yards that you shouldn't get because that dude still, you know, dude across from Trent Williams isn't beating Trent Williams because he's Trent Williams and that's what greatness does. But by and large, like, it comes down to, do you have answers in your scheme to deal with pressure, either pre-snap by adjusting protections and all that kind of stuff, or post-snap by hot reads or easy stuff built in, checkdowns that are available immediately, and a quarterback who can process all of that, a quarterback who understands where pressure is coming from, what he's got to do with it, etc. And I just think the difference is in the scheme, Cliff being quarterback friendly, Eric being extremely not quarterback friendly, unless your quarterback is Patrick Mahomes and he can handle an absurd amount of information, data, etc. And Andy Reid, by the way, also has a lot to do with that. It certainly appears. But, you know, Eric's theory of the case with Sam Howell, who is not up to speed, and Cliff's theory of the case with Jaden Daniels, who, even though he hasn't actually played an NFL snap yet, seems to be very up to speed. Like, it's just, it's a different test that they have to take this year. And thus, to continue that analogy, Ant, I think the grade's going to be pretty different.
I think it's going to be substantially different as well. But also, I think I saw some graphic that said the Commanders' pass block grade actually wasn't as bad as, you know, it was made out to be, or, you know, the narrative that was driven around it. So, and also, you know, bringing in Cliff and, you know, a more mobile quarterback, I definitely think it's going to be substantially different. And I don't think we're going to have the same, you know, thoughts as we did on our offensive line as we did last year. But to, you know, a lot of fans' point, I would have loved to, you know, see some of those guys, you know, build some continuity over the preseason, but, you know, we didn't have that, so I think we just got to go
hurt.
With it.
Yeah, Coleman was hurt. There's nothing you can do about that. And, you know, I've yet to hear a good answer to, oh, they should have done more in the offseason. Okay, what should they have done? there's not a good answer because they used their first-round pick on a left tackle. They could have gotten a second-round pick on, they used a first-round pick on a quarterback. Second-round pick, they used on a defensive tackle, fine, but they could have used it on a left tackle who probably isn't that much different than Brandon Coleman, who they used their third-round pick on. Like, what are we talking about? And there's a lot of people that think that Brandon Coleman might be better than some of those dudes who went in the second round around that range. And then you got to punt on Sainristil still and, you know, the other guys that they took in that second round, and Johnny Newton, who could be like a Pro Bowl-level player if things turn out properly for him in the eyes of some. So I get it. But I think it just comes down to two main points that Logan made, which is why we wanted to play that here on the radio, which is, one, if you take the number of dropbacks from 35 to 15 and keep the ratios all the same, which is actually not even how that works because now you're a more balanced offense, the defense is more off guard, you know, like they can't sit on stuff. But if you were to just keep all that the same, pretend like there's no schematic difference in 35 and 15 dropbacks. If, let's say, you even lose 50% of the time, which is not the actual number, but just for easy math, at 35, you're losing 17 to 18 times a game. At 15 dropbacks, you're losing 7 to 8. Like, that alone really matters. And then, like Logan said, the example from the preseason, and we'll talk about this more with Nate Tice coming up at 6 o'clock, of how Jaden's able to avoid some of this stuff, not just because he can run with his legs, but like that play in the preseason where he threw it out of bounds over Terry's head, he realized that he got himself in a bad way, and instead of turtling or trying to extend and make a play and, you know, wind up taking a huge hit and a sack, he just throws the ball out of bounds. He actually tried to throw it where Terry almost had a chance, and he just overthrew it a little bit, but he also knew, like, I'm throwing into bad coverage here. I'm just going to throw it out of bounds. And he did. And, like, it sucks because you'd rather have a good play than an incompletion thrown out of bounds. But an incompletion thrown out of bounds is way better than a sack fumble. And so that is the kind of difference that a quarterback can make, and why sacks are often a quarterback stat, not something that's actually indicative of how an offensive line is playing down in and down out. All right, when we get back, I'm an upset customer, and I'm going to let it out a little bit on the radio. Stop and show on Team 980. Nate Tice, Yahoo Sports, NFL Network, is going to join us coming up at 6 o'clock. The NFL trends of the year is the topic. Looking forward to talking with Nate about that and what he's seen from Jaden Daniels so far. If you don't know, Nate's the son of Mike Tice, the former Vikings coach, but he played a quarterback at Wisconsin. He actually backed up Russell Wilson and then was a coach and scout before getting into the media world. And has been a rising star and nice enough to spend some time with us in the 6 o'clock hour today. So, Anthony, I've debated whether or not to take this public, if you will, but I think I've passed a deadline where I am now justified in being a whiny person. I haven't had gas in my house since Wednesday, and I'm pretty mad about it.
You're talking about the gas that allows you to cook. The gas.
That's right. Fuels our hot water heater.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have a fit. Whatever hot water was in the heater, we've run out. So we're now in cold shower mode. And
that's concerning.
Tuesday night is when this actually happened. We woke up to the news Wednesday morning. Or maybe it was Monday night and we woke up Tuesday. Either way, it's been a long time. And basically, apparently what happened is we live in like a condo building, so we're not in control of this. In one of the common areas, this affected multiple units in our condo building, there was a connector that came loose, and one of our neighbors smelled gas, and obviously, safety first, turn off the gas, and then let's get that thing fixed. Well, apparently, Washington Gas will come and turn off the gas, but they don't fix the stuff. So then, we had to have the building call a tech to come out. It took forever to get the tech out. But we were told by Washington Gas, as soon as the tech comes out, call us, and same day we'll come turn on your gas. Well, we found out, I think it was yesterday morning, that finally it got fixed late Wednesday night. Thursday morning, early, I'm on the phone with Washington Gas, and I'm like, hey, they fixed the thing. Can you come out and fix our stuff? And lo and behold, nope. Sorry, you're going to have to wait till tomorrow. And so they tell us, okay, you're going to have to wait till tomorrow. And then it is a, they say the window is 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Like, that's a reasonable thing for us to just put our lives on hold. Not, hey, can you pick a 3-hour window even between 7 and 5? You got to be available 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. today to get the gas turned on. Well, Anthony, it's 5:53. We don't have gas yet.
Wow.
So I called this afternoon. It was like 2 o'clock, and I was like, hey, can you give us an ETA? Can you give us an anything? Can you maybe escalate this, since you told us on Wednesday that it'd be a same-day bit, and it's now Friday, and nothing. And they're like, we can't do that. Like, can you tell us an ETA? No, sorry, we can't give you an ETA. It's sometime between 7 and 5. And actually, our technicians, this is the first time they told me this, our technicians work until 9, so it might actually be after 5. Go ahead. If you have something intelligent to say, go ahead, because I got nothing.
I don't have anything intelligent to say. I was more so going to side with you and your frustration, because that is like,
what kind of customer service policy is that? Like, and the thing that I think, like, I don't want to get on too much of a high horse here, because then you just become a guy complaining on the radio. But like, this is utilities. Like, it's not like we could choose. This is not subject to the market factors of capitalism, right? It's not like I can be like, hey, you guys suck, I'm going to go to your competitor. If like Verizon or AT&T or T-Mobile or whoever my wireless person is, like, starts dropping calls like crazy, I'd be like, hey, you suck, I'm going to cancel. I wouldn't actually do that, by the way. Be nice to customer service people. It's like, they're enforcing terrible policies. Be mean to their bosses. Just kidding. Treat everyone like a person. But I'd be like, hey, we're unhappy with the service. We're going to go somewhere else, and we'll pay someone else money. We don't have that option. We're just screwed for something that we kind of need to live. Because, yeah, did people live without gas for a long time? But their lives were set up that way. When you're living in the teepee, you build a fire. When you live in a home with a gas-powered hot water heater, you don't plan on having to heat your water. And by the way, we can't even heat our water because we'd have to do it on our stove, which is powered by gas.
God dang. So hopefully this gets taken care of.
If this doesn't get taken care of tonight,
3 hours, like,
I don't know what I'm going to do, because like, what recourse do I have? Apparently calling. And this is my favorite part, Anthony, my absolute favorite part of this. This is too stupid to make up. Guess what Washington Gas calls their customer service reps? They call them customer advocates. Customer advocates that do zero advocating for their customers and tell them, I'm sorry, there's nothing. I'm so sorry about that. Call them customer apologizers, tours.
Apologist.
They're not really apologists. Call them punching bags. Because, like, I do try to be nice to customer service folks, because I realize they're stuck. And I'll, like, even if it's like, hey, can you please make a note of this for your supervisors or the people who make up your policy, because like, this is dumb. And they'll often go, yes, I will, because I'm sorry that you're having to go through this. And I'm like, I'm sure you are. But to call them customer advocates and not let them actually advocate for the customers. Chef's kiss, Washington Gas. Get your butt out here and please turn my gas back on. I'd like to be able to take a hot shower and cook dinner. When we get back on the Hoffman Show, no more silly ranting by me about my living predicaments and my home predicaments. Nope, you get really smart football talk with Nate Tice. That's next on the Team 980.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.